What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? First of all, thank you for taking the time to listen to this and all Big MX Radio podcasts you happen to check out. It means a lot to me, and yeah, that's how we keep this whole thing rolling. I want to give a huge shout out to a few of the people who make this whole thing possible. I'm talking about Racetech suspension and engines, the Gold Valves. If you don't have Gold Valves in your bike, grow up. They are the number one way to add plushness and bottoming resistance to your ride, and you're going to enjoy your motorcycle that much more. If you enjoy your motorcycle more, you're going to ride more. If you ride more, you're going to get more throttle therapy. We all win. I want to also give a huge shout out to Backyard Design. Big MX Radio 24 saves you 24% off your entire order. Would love if you guys use that code to show that the Big MX Radio faithful loves their Backyard Designs. You can honestly go on the website and design anything under the sun. You'd be amazed at all the logos that they have on there. And then, of course, you can always upload your own. Fast Company, the Flex Bars, they're super sick. They also have foot pegs that I'm super excited about. Wee Big Moto Co. If you ever see me wearing some obnoxious clothing with logos that probably got ripped off big time, like the Marlboro smoking hat, that's Backyard. That's not Backyard Design. That's Wee Big Moto Co. They're awesome. Heartbeat Hot Sauce. Those guys are amazing. They're available at Costco in Canada. I don't know if that's the case in the States, but they should be soon. Luxon MX. You can use Big MX 2024, I think it's Big MX 24. I think Big MX 24 is the code to save. It's either Big MX 24 or Big MX 2024, and you can save 10% off your order. Now, if that's a set of triple clamps, they're about $1,000, so you're going to save $100 just by plugging in that code. I would highly recommend doing so. The guys over at Money Inc., they're literally on this particular podcast, and I absolutely love these guys. They do such great work. If you're looking for durability and performance cross-sectioned into what can only be considered an absolute rocket ship of a dirt bike, you want to call up Money Inc. They also have Flow Vision goggles and VP Racing fuels, and they offer trackside service at the events that they go to, which is super rad. Last but not least, Guts Racing. Big MX 20 saves you 20% with Guts Racing every purchase. No matter how many times you use the code, you're going to save yourself some money doing so. So please go ahead and do that, guys. Appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to this episode. Now let's get to the pod.
We are live.
Awesome. Welcome to another episode on the Big MX Podcast Network. This is Amateur Hour, and this podcast is brought to you by Money Inc., especially this podcast because we have the sole proprietor, the big boss with the hot sauce over at Money Inc. on the podcast. Some people call him Steve Money. I know him best as Steve Street. Steve, how's it going?
It's going good, buddy. How are you doing, Brad?
I'm not doing too bad. It's absolutely gorgeous here, up here in Canada today. We're like suffering right around like 60, 75, 72, sunny, a little bit cool in the evenings. Summer is just officially here. We're going to get some heat. We're going to get some thunderstorms. And, that just means that we are ticking down the clock moment by moment before we head to Loretta Lynn's. Where do we start with you, man? I think we could probably go right back to where the whole story begins, where you got introduced to motorcycles, got addicted to it, and then at some point you figured out how to make them go faster.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I was kind of born and raised in the motocross world. My dad kind of brought me up like just mechanic skill wise. And then I kept going to a dirt bike shop when I was younger every afternoon after school. And, they're like, hey, do you want a job? And you know, I'm from Wyoming originally. So It's not out of the ordinary to be 13 year old and have like a real job. So, I started doing that and, stayed there for a couple of years, went to MMI and then I kind of blossomed to what I am now.
There you go. You went to MMI, a tale as old as time. Did you watch one of those commercials from like the late 90s, early 2000s, when it was like you were bought up on the pegs of a dirt bike? The sound of a stroker makes your engine your heart race. Like, did you see one of those commercials on Speed Channel, and we're like, that's where I'm going?
I'm not necessarily. I think I just wanted to kind of spread my wings and get out of my hometown. You know what I mean? So okay. We grew up in a small town, 8,000 people, and I just said that. Let's go to the big city, and went to Phoenix, and then ended up in Colorado somehow. So,
fair enough. Well, that's not too terribly far away. So, going to MMI, what would you say was the biggest takeaway or the biggest lesson that you learned while spending some time there?
In reality, it's what you put into it. Like, it's a great school, but like they'll just kind of bump you along. But I think going in with shop experience, I got a lot more out of it. You know, it was more for the certification part of it. You know, we got Yamaha certification, Suzuki certification, that kind of stuff. Just for the real world, just the paperwork. It's all about hands on, in my opinion.
Certainly. And you've had a lot of time hands on with that. So when did you decide that, first of all, like we need to find out what's in the name, Money Inc. And this is the first time it was on my radar was when I went down to World Mini, about a year and maybe 13, 14 months ago, down at Mesquite. And seemed like every kid that was getting a trophy that's taller than them was thanking Money Inc. I'm like, what is this brand? What is this company? Who is Money Inc.? And I guess that's you, for lack of better terms. And yeah, so what's in the name? What's Money Inc.? And what does it mean to you?
Yes, sir. It's kind of a funny story. So at the first shop I worked at in Colorado, me and the parts manager at the time, every Friday we'd hold our paychecks up. You know, this is back in the Stone Age when we actually had a paper check.
Yeah.
Instead of direct deposit. So we put it behind our backs, and then every Friday we'd hold it up, and whoever got the bigger check, right, would win. So, like, eventually, I was a flat rate technician for my whole entire life. We have a bigger check than him, and he's like, hey, what's up, Steve Money? What's up, Steve Money? And then that kind of turned into my nickname. And then from then on out, it was like, you know, Money, we do what we want. And then it just kind of went from there, and is it going strong? I think we LLC'd in 2002, so we've been doing this for a long time.
No doubt. That's over 22 years as you guys have been making engines go to the front of the pack time and time again. And honestly, like, I thought that maybe it was like money just meant that you guys were absolutely money on hole shots, because watching some of the athletes that you were working with, like Jet Rao at that at Money Inc., like, or at Mesquite rather, like it was like a far gone conclusion. When the gate dropped, the kid was going to be at the front of the pack, which obviously it does. Like, motocross always comes down to the rider, but when it comes to getting a great start, an engine always has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, 100%. So I mean, like, the Money Inc. kind of thing kind of goes with that's so money, and the money hole shot and all that good stuff. It all kind of goes together. So I'm kind of glad we kind of stuck what we originally planned with, you know, 20 years ago. It makes me sound old.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Well, I actually saw a video today. It was like 15 years ago. I'm like, 15 years ago? That means I was 20 when I was watching that motocross video. And makes me feel awfully old. I'm 35 now. So you working on, like, you work with kids on 50s. You work on 65s, 85s, 125s, even 250B. So there's not really, like, sort of a limit as to what you've been able to work on in the past number of years. Is there a specific machine that you feel like you are most adept to, or is there maybe a specific machine out there that you think you make the biggest amount of improvements on?
You know, that's kind of hard to say. You know, we go from PWs all the way to 450s, like you were saying.
Right.
We kind of we're focusing on the Cobras a little bit right now, just because there's a pretty in need market for that, I guess you'd say. You know, there's a handful of us that do it well out there, and I like to help the kids out, to be honest with you. Like, we have no kids between me and my wife that are on 50s anymore, and we still really thrive to help the younger crowd out. And I'm going to be honest with you, you know, you get a 5 or 6 year old kid, you know, even 8 or 9, that gives you a genuine thank you that doesn't come from the parent. You know, that means a lot. And that kind of refired the torch for me after doing this for so long. You know, I always had lost interest. You lose, like, why you're doing it. And I think 2018, 2017, we kind of started getting into the Cobra world. And, you know, it kind of revived me to really want to do this again.
Certainly, and Cobra is actually kind of an interesting manufacturer. Obviously, they're an American made manufacturer, as far as I know. They're not Ohio, correct?
Nope, they are in Michigan.
Michigan. I knew it was some northern country that or province that actually get or state that actually gets some degree of winter. But it's 50s, 65s. I'm actually shocked that they don't have an 80 yet. But they've really perfected that, like, even throughout, like, the very late 90s and into the 2000s, like, the 50 class started to get absolutely dominated by these pocket rockets, these Cobras. And you yourself, if I'm not mistaken, have become a Cobra dealer. Is that correct?
Yeah, yes, sir. That's correct. As of January, we're a full-line Cobra dealer, so we offer parts, accessories, new bikes, all that good stuff. And, yeah, Cobra really focuses on the small bikes, so their R&D is always there. You know, that's going to be the advantage to, like, a Cobra over, like, a, you know, KTM or whatever, because every year they're doing something different to make that bike better and better and better. Compared to other manufacturers, you know, they focus on, say, the 250s that year, and then 2 years later they go to the 450s, and then they go back to 85. So,
right.
Cobra's also has the new e-bikes coming out that are just absolutely insane. The new 60-volt Cobra e-bike is just rowdy. If you don't have one, you're not going to stand a chance, in my opinion.
Wow, that is pretty wild. And when it comes to an electric bike, like what can you do from a performance standpoint that without giving away all your secrets, that they can really unlock some of those things? Or is it basically just making the bike as light as possible and going from there? Like what's like your for the most part, your engine modifications and stuff like that. I don't know how much can be done when it comes to electric. Maybe you're just going to open my eyes right here.
Right. Unfortunately, in the electric world right now, like, there's nothing we can really do. Our hands are kind of tied. Like, the program is really good from Cobra.
Okay.
The biggest thing we can do, you know, suspension setup and gearing changes. Unfortunately, it's taken the engine part out of it for me. But I think probably before I'm done, like, maybe e-bikes will eventually take over. But hopefully you get another good 10 years of doing what I do before gasoline engines go away altogether. So
mixed gas, haul ass. And, yeah, you're totally right.
Yeah,
like, that's... These bikes are pretty much on the limit. And you mentioned you also do suspension tuning. So it's not just money ink engines, it's suspension as well.
Correct. I mean, we don't do a ton of suspension in-house work. Like, in-house we'll do some stuff. It's too hard to do both. But, like, tuning-wise, you know, we can set sag and watch the rider and get it dialed in a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Suspension stuff, we send a lot of outhouse stuff just because it's hard to do everything all at once. But we can, like, refurbish suspension, you know, like, seals, bushings, and all that stuff on the internal side of it. Absolutely.
Fair enough. So you yourself are a moto dad. Your kids both race, and I've seen them do exactly that. In fact, I called your son's first ever race on a 125, which is near and dear to my heart, because I like you can maybe attest to this. You always remember the first time you race a full-size bike. Like, regardless of how that weekend goes, you remember what that was all about.
Yeah, 100%. And that was a big weekend for us. He's on AMA 12. He's on the younger side of it, but he's built pretty thick. So we bumped him up kind of fast, and now we're really maturing on the 125. We're having some good finishes. So, you know, we got the 12 to 17 BC class is what we race. So we're with the big fast kids. So I think by next year we'll be, you know, mid pack national. Hopefully, that's kind of my goal. If not, like, you know, they're following me around doing what I love because this is what they love. And it means a lot just for them to continue doing what they want to do with me because it's stressful sometimes.
It certainly is. And your travel schedule would be stressful enough. Never mind pulling apart engines long into the night, as I've seen you do, not only at World Mini, but also at Mesquite for their Thanksgiving race. I can't imagine. I don't know. I went to bed long before you did, and then you were up before me, probably still working on engines. That was absolutely nuts. But one of the things that I love about Money Inc., obviously, you guys do great with like the parts and sales and Cobras, but it's the service. It's the trackside service that you offer to literally anyone who shows up to the track. But not only that, but also your team riders who appreciate all of your hard work. How much of a linchpin to your success is actually being there with boots on the ground in the trenches and offering that service, whether it's flipping tires, doing suspension, or digging your knuckles into a Cobra 50?
Honestly, it's 100%. Like, that's where it's at. Like, I can't really feel comfortable offering a product, you know. I can't sell a guy, you know, a $2,000 engine build and then not be there to back it up if something goes wrong.
Right.
You know, and it's a lot of tuning as well. Like, if you send a guy an engine out and he doesn't know anything about a carburetor to get it to run correctly, like, it does him no good. So I think a lot of our success has been being at these major events and traveling around, meeting great people as well, like you. You know, we never would have met if I was sitting at home doing it in my garage and shipping him in the mail.
Oh, for sure. Well, I think what needs to happen then is I need to get a secondary motor for my 04 KX125, and I need to ship it over to Money Inc. and have you dig into that thing, port it, polish, give me the full rundown, and then I need to bring the motorcycle down to where you guys are at. Race that local event or maybe one of the nationals that you guys attend to, and we'll document the entire thing.
Yeah, I think that'd be awesome. We should really do that. We should, yeah, that'd be sweet.
No doubt. So throughout your travels, you must have come across some very rewarding experiences, being able to help kids achieve the dream of being able to go to the Redolins and compete at the highest level. If you could, like, regale me with a couple of Money Inc. success stories, because I know there's a ton of them.
Man, it's kind of hard just to pick one or two, you know. In reality, like, they're all rewarding to me. Just seeing the progress of a lot of these kids, you know, I've worked with kids since they were, on the 50s all the way to like the pro level now. So, I mean, to pick one or two, that's kind of an impossible thing to do. The most rewarding thing for me is
around here.
Yeah, right. No, absolutely. The most rewarding thing to me is basically, it doesn't matter if the kid's first or last, like how they finish in the race. They give 100%, you know, that means they're giving back to me what I gave to them.
That's super solid, man. So, like, throughout your travels with Money Inc., obviously you got, like, the hoodies are unreal. You guys are trackside. It's a whole family vibe around there. And I do mean family vibe, because you also have your wife, Summer, who is around all the time. She's helping people out. She's doing the sales. She's making sure that people got their tear-offs for their Flow Vision goggles, or maybe they're getting a T-Rex billet throttle assembly as well, something along those lines. It's a full family effort, and you wouldn't be able to do what you can do without her also in your corner, cheering you on as well as being an active participant.
Yeah, no, 100%. She does great despite, greeting people, keeping the line in check, and
keeping
letting
you
me know
in
what
check.
Needs to be done. And, yeah, keeping me in check. Make sure that I'm actually eating and drinking for the weekend.
Yep.
So she puts a huge part in this thing, we got some good people in our corner. We got a guy down in Texas that helps us out. I got a new guy up here that's working full time in my shop. I'm just recently actually quit my full time job and done this full time. So I got a full-time employee up here. He does great. He just did his first national last weekend with me and passed with flying colors. Couldn't ask for anything better. I believe my older son's going to go this weekend to Thunder Valley for the adult regional and run the front for me. So it's going to be a good experience for him too, like to actually have to sit in one place and work instead of race, because he's not going to shoot for Loretta this year.
Fair enough. Well, yeah. And are you guys going to be on hand at Loretta's this year, or what's the plan there?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're going to leave a little early, and we're going to spend 2 days at game. I have a lot of my riders going to actually meet up at game, so we can do like a 2 day test to get all of our bikes set up. It's a similar soil, similar temperatures, similar humidity. So I think about, I don't know, 8 or 10 of us are going to meet there and do a bike tune. And then, we'll definitely go to Loretta's like 4 days early and do the same thing down there with the people that couldn't join us at game. We'll do a bike tune down there. The track about 5 minutes away. We go to every year, and we'll do a final tune there. That way we go to practice, the bikes are set, ready to go. No excuses on any part. That way the rider can have the best equipment as possible, and we don't have to be stressing.
No doubt. That is a hell of a service that you're able to provide. And yeah, like linking up with a guy like Greg Albertson, who has been around the amateur scene for the better part of 30 years, let's be completely honest. Like, him and his brother competed at the highest level of the amateur scene. Obviously, his Jimmy Albertson getting to the pro level. But even then, like, Greg never truly left the amateur stuff. Like, he always like was able to, he's worked with young athletes throughout his history, continues to do so. They have a replica track right now. I was blown away, and everyone says, it's so funny. Everyone says when you go to Loretta's, you won't believe how small the track is. And you're like, oh, how small could it possibly be? And like, I think I've been to backyard tracks that are bigger than Loretta's, and it's extremely challenging, and it's the same for everybody. And, yeah, you guys going down there, that's going to be a rad time. And I'm looking forward to doing the exact same.
Are you going to join us this year?
Oh, yes. Last year I was down there with the Vert boys, doing my thing. We didn't have a real set list of what we were going to accomplish, but this year, I'm going with a big plan. I'm working with one of the publications that is near and dear to my heart. We Went Fast, and we're going to chronologize basically the week of and the month leading up to in an article with three different athletes, one of which is actually going to feature one of your athletes. I'll let you know which one it is off air, but I'm excited about it. That's going to be awesome.
That's super cool.
Yeah, like three different athletes, three different age groups. But one dream, right? That like to go to Loretta's and show out in front of the entire industry. That's what it's all about.
Oh, 100%. And the good thing is you're going down there, you'll have a home base. So we'll be fully set up and you guys are more than welcome to come hang out and chill or whatever need be. So spend some more time, you guys, in person.
Yes, sir. So like, I'm going to attach this conversation to another conversation that we're going to be having with Everett, Everett Posto. Tell me a little bit about this gentleman who is going coast to coast to coast in here in Canada. He's actually dipped back into the States because that's the fastest way to drive between here and Gopher Dunes, which is for round four. You've got your bikes or your engines all over North America right now, including Canada, and a family that is taking a little bit of an unorthodox approach to their summer. Rather than going to Loretta Lynn's, they're taking on the Canadian Nationals.
Yeah, that was huge for them. I spoke with Everett a couple months ago, and he's like, what do you think? I was like, man, like, you've done Loretta's the last 2 or 3 years. I said, follow something new, you know, go to Canada. That's really awesome. Coming back to it with Everett, like, I started working with the younger son. The younger son had made it to Loretta's, 2 years ago. And then the older son, he went as an alternate. And then last year they really hit it hard. And I believe J.E. was 10, 11 or something like that in the 65 class. I don't know if it was moderate or the stock class. And then Patrick, the little brother, I think he pulled a solid 15 or 17th as a 7-year-old in the 50 class, which is really big. So.
Yeah.
I've been with these guys for like 2 or 3 years and they've been really good customers. And, you know, he asked my honest opinion about Canada. And I was like, man, if you got an opportunity to do something different, like let it rip. And makes me proud to have, you know, an engine in a different country running and doing well. You know, I saw some results from a couple weeks ago. It looks like they had some number one plates in their hand and that was awesome.
Yeah, no, Money Inc. hoodies on the torso and number one plates in the hand. They were stoked. They went to Westcan, which was in Lethbridge, Alberta. It's about 12 hours from where I'm sitting right now, right here and now. And yeah, they've been successful. And honestly, I commend him for choosing that route. Obviously, I think in the long run, him and his family will likely end up back at Hurricane Mills, Tennessee for, Loretta's. But, and I spoke to him when he was on his way up and he's kind of like, I don't know if this is the right way to go thing. And I honestly reassured him the fact that like, if I asked you, what Daxon Bennick's, results were in when he was 7 or 9 years old, which I think the ages of their sons, like, could you tell me just offhand how, Daxon did that weekend?
So are we talking about like at Loretta's or like in the the Canadians here? Shoot, I don't even know.
Right.
Let's go 25.
Sure.
25.
Or even Hayden Deegan or even a kid like Tate Reed who has never been to Loretta's, at 9 or 10 years old, he wasn't going to Loretta's at all. And I add dollars to donuts if Tate Reed isn't one day going to line up for a pro national. So as much as Loretta's is a huge event and a great opportunity to show out for sponsors, it's not always the be all end all, especially at the 7 to 9 year old range where, sometimes like, you know, as well as I do, like if you have a class that's the 7 to 9 class, you're going to have more 9 year olds in the top 10 than anywhere else. Right.
And 100%. Yeah.
Always like it's that the kids that are probably like, they're an AMA 9, but they were born in February. So they're actually 10
right.
years old. They're racing a 65 against a bunch of 7 and 8 year olds. And not to say that's like skirting the rules or anything like that. That's just how it is. And
just how it is. Right.
Yeah. The classes are often dominated in that sort of fashion. So, here's the number one reason to come to Canada. Every single one of your dollars is worth $1.30 Canadian. So,
bonus.
Yeah. So that's a nice bonus. That's Steve Money, with dollar signs in his head
there
saying like, hey, we can make a difference here. So especially when it comes to like gas money and stuff like that. Like I was talking to Everett over the phone. And he said, going to one of the races here was about a third or a quarter of what he would have cost him to go to a race in the States.
Yeah, that is true. We spoke about that as well. I think like the whole schmoll for them was like $280 for the weekend or something like that. And like,
yeah.
I couldn't even get in the damn gate at a race even here, you know, for that. It's insane, which is great though. I mean, the travel part sucks for them. You know, I think you said they're going to be like 15,000 miles alone this summer. You know, that's a lot of miles, but you know, he's dedicating it and he's going to finish the whole series out, which is huge. You know, that's some,
And that's, he's going to see a beautiful country with his family and make some awesome memories. Like, I love his program. Like,
yeah, as much as I'd love to sit in my motorhome for 15,000 miles with my family, I think it'd be fun for about 10. No, I'm just joking.
Probably, yeah. Well, hey, you're talking to a guy who's
10 minutes.
It wasn't that long ago that I drove from Winnipeg to Lethbridge, Lethbridge to Vegas, Vegas down to California, back to Vegas, back to Lethbridge and home in the course of like 10 days. So that was 67 hours in a vehicle over the course of 10 Ooh. Days. No thanks. I will check that at the door every time. So I guess the biggest question, Steve, is what do you hope that people can take away from working with Money Inc. and why should they choose to work with you when it comes to horsepower and wanting to kind of take their racing to the next level?
I mean, 100%, like, it boils down to this. Like, we offer an honest product. We stand behind what we do. We give everyone the same advantage. It doesn't matter if you're a 30th place rider or a first place rider, you're going to get the same engine. You can do all you want on a dyno. Dyno numbers don't really mean anything to me. How's that bike perform 10 minutes into the moto? You know what I mean? When the bike's good hot, and is it be consistent? Is it going to, you know, is it going to fail on you, be consistent, or, you know, be all top end or all bottom end? We try to build an all around engine from low to mid to high. And we can build, you know, to the rider too. Say you have a rider that's all top end. Well, we can change some settings and make it so that thing screams on top. But a lot of times we try to keep it, you know, bottom mid pretty comfortable, so it, you know, gets some consistent power through the whole entire moto, not just the first lap.
No, absolutely, I like it, and I think we're sort of in the process of tabulating a lot of testimony that echoes exactly that. How can people find out more information? Where can they reach out, and ultimately also where can they follow on social media so they can never miss a beat?
Right. So basically, we do have a Facebook and an Instagram set up. I think there's more than that too. My wife is in charge of all that stuff.
Of course.
We do have a website that is functional. It's not fully built right now, but there's some contact information.
I'm working on it.
So I know, right? So either way, moneymotorsports.com, the stickers you see, it is a website that you can contact me from. Phone number as well, 719-250-0602. And my business cards, which are probably all over America, I have my email as well. So the best way is text message me on that phone number. That's the best way to get a hold of me.
Fair enough. And once you've cleaned the grease off your fingers, but actually you probably don't even do that. You get back people as quickly as you can. And
100%.
Yeah. Awesome.
That's why we recommend the text message, because we do get so many phone calls a day. It's hard for me to answer every phone call, but at the end of the day, I will go through all my contacts and respond to everybody. And phone calls, you'll get a phone call back. It might be 24 hours, but I will return the phone call.
I love it, man. Well, this has been awesome getting to know Steve Street, or Steve Money, as he's better known to those who are putting engines into their bikes, whether it's a 250F or a Cobra 50 or even a PW50. Steve, this has been awesome.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I appreciate everything.
You as well. You have yourself a great rest of your day. Don't hang up just yet, but for podcast sake, we're going to cut things off right there. All right, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Steve Street, Steve Money from Money Inc. And now let's send things over to my interview with Everett Pastureau. I'm pleased and proud to welcome onto the show. It's his first time on, but it'll probably be a repeat offender because I really enjoy speaking with this individual. Everett Pastureau from Texas. Everett, how's it going?
I'm doing great. I'm doing absolutely great.
Fantastic, my friend. You are a moto dad. You are a motocross enthusiast, and you are currently, well, actually, you're in the States right now, but up until about a day or so ago, you were traversing the Great Canadian Trail, going all the way from Texas up to Calgary, Alberta, then Lethbridge, then Manitoba, where it was awfully windy and a whole bunch of else. You've got a little bit of an unorthodox approach to amateur racing with your two sons, John Everett and Patrick, and that's exactly what we're here to talk about. Before we get to that, sort of give us a little bit of behind the scenes of Everett, of yourself.
Okay, so we are starting our fourth year as a family in racing. I have two boys, John Everett Pastureau and Patrick Pastureau, who both race. John Everett is, you know, AMA 10, and he is 11. His young brother is AMA 8, still 8, will be 9 in September. One of the Patrick races the 65 and the 50 class, and John Everett races the 85 and the 65 class. And we have spent the last year, just about the last year, at Tapped House training, trying to up our game to what I would consider like a national level rider. And we have been fortunate enough to go to Loretta's twice, even before we really even knew what Loretta's was. John Everett made it in the 7-8 class, and Patrick made it in the 4-6. And last year, they made it again. John Everett made it in the 65 class in the 7-9, and Patrick made it in the 7-8 50 class. So this year, we, and at the same time, while trying once again to go to Loretta's, we were offered an opportunity to go race up in Canada in the Triple Crown Series. And at first, we didn't even know this existed. We didn't really know of any other options. We kind of just followed what everybody else was doing. And we started realizing that this Triple Crown Series might be opportunity of a lifetime for our kids, because not just the networking, but new tracks, new families to meet, and weather that wasn't 100 degrees and 90% relative humidity. So we decided, let's see what this is all about, right? So the more we looked into it, the more we realized, okay, well, maybe this is something that, would not just be good for, like a vacation, but maybe this would also be good for their riding, for their development. So we discussed it with Taylor Painter, the amazing trainer at Tapped House. And he basically said, yeah, this sounds like something that you guys should go do. And, let's get ready for it. Let's start training. And, that's what we did. We decided, okay, well, instead of Loretta's this year, instead of chasing that, dragon that, and everyone tells you that's, what you got to do, we decide, hey, let's go try this. And it was amazing that time and time again, we would be asked by somebody that we were training with, okay, well, what are y'all doing? What area are you going to? And we would say, well, we're not doing that this year. We're going to go off and we're going to do this thing in Canada. And, after 5 or 10 minutes of talking with somebody, they would be like, man, that actually sounds great. And the more we talked about it, the more people were telling us that, okay, yeah, that actually sounds really cool. And I feel like right now there's actually quite a few people that are waiting to hear how this is all going, because I feel like there's like this buzz about it. Like maybe there is something else besides Loretta's. Maybe we don't have to die in this Texas and Tennessee heat. Like maybe we can try something else, right? And from what we've experienced so far, I think it's the best decision we ever made, for many, many reasons, right? But the weather being, one small reason, but the culture of racing in Canada, as far as I'm concerned, is amazing. I will definitely be doing this Triple Crown Series going forward.
That is awesome. And yeah, a different approach to a summer of fun. I think you're cultivating good racers, strong men, and making memories in, I would say humbly, one of the most beautiful countries in all the world. On top of the fact that your dollar goes a little bit further up here than it does downstairs, mainly because the Canadian dollars.
My wife keeps bringing that up. Yes, thank
yeah.
You. That is one great bonus. Yes, my wife is very happy about that.
No kidding. Yeah, no, it's a little easier on the pocketbook when every one of your dollars is worth $1.34 Canadian. But on top of that, just tell me a little bit about, before we get into I wanted to ask some questions about Tapped House, but tell me a little bit about some of the experiences that you've been able to enjoy while racing the Triple Crown Series. Of course, your sons are participating in the Amateur Day, and every single one of the events throughout the Triple Crown Series has a corresponding Amateur Day where local and kids from across the country test their mettle. There's West Can, there's E-Can, and then there's the Trans Can at the very end of the year, which is our version of Loretta's. You're in for all of it. Tell me a little bit about what you've enjoyed so far.
So I guess what I've enjoyed the most is, like we were talking about before, it's the culture. the best example I can give you is the young man that my older son was competing with, you know, for the West Can Championship. I mean, he had won last year. I think by looking at statistics, he's the clear favorite, right? We come in and John Everett not only gives him a good run for his money, but John Everett actually comes out on top. He does win the West Can. And, you know, after one of the motos, I can't remember which one, the first or second moto that they ran, young man gets off the track, you know, after John Everett has gotten off, and he rolls up on John Everett, kind of puts his arm around him and congratulates him and, you know, tells him, man, you're really fast. That's amazing. And you know, through the course of the weekend, kind of becomes, you know, the ambassador of Canada to my son, and befriending him and introducing him to all these other kids. And, you know, the way I'm looking at it, I'm kind of thinking, well, you know, this is, you know, if John Everett doesn't show up, this kid leaves the West Can champion, right? And I just think the way that his family, you know, dealt with us, I mean, they helped with my son's Cobra. This young man's father happens to be the West Canadian Cobra dealer, right? And not only does he help me with, you know, little brother's Cobra bike, but he actually helps me fix John Everett's 85, which is, you know, a Husqvarna, not even a Cobra, because right. He happens to know how to work on KTMs, right? And all this while I'm sitting here and I finally put two and two together and I realize the man that's helping me, his son is competing with my son, right? And it just, I don't know, the way that they interacted with us and the way they treated us and the way that their son treated my son, it inspired me. You know, it made me feel, and that doesn't always happen in the sport. And we talked about that. You know, there's a darker side to this sport that the male ego comes into and things happen. And, you know, there's not a lot of grace given, unfortunately. But what I've encountered up here in Canada, as far as a race culture where the men and the women are, you know, they're racing with their children, they're wearing the same numbers, you know, there's, you know, the support that they give each other. I'm not going to say that in the United States that doesn't exist. It's just a little harder to find, considering there was less people involved in the race. The majority of the people that I dealt with in Canada, in my opinion, they exude a little bit more of what I would like to have my children around as far as a culture. And, you know, again, I don't like to talk bad about anything, you know, or say negatives. I just want to be more positive about it and express that, you know, if you're looking for more of a supportive culture where, you know, like I think the focus is more on the relationships between the families than necessarily the placement of the child, I think I got a good dose of it here at West Can. I really do.
That is awesome. And your sons have been successful on top of that. Like I saw them this past Sunday for the pro national version of Pilot Mount, and you guys raced the day before. They had a little bit of a fan group walking around with them. These kids are awfully fast, thanks to some skills acquired not only on this trip but at Tapped House as well. And just the fact that they're going your sons are going coast to coast and probably ride more in 1 month than a lot of them get to do all year long. Yeah, kids are pretty blown away with that whole program, and yeah, turned some heads for sure. Like, what does it mean to you to be able to see your sons meet these, like, new Canadian kids that are, like, basically just adopt them like their own all at once?
I mean, I think anyone that's ever had a child has seen that moment where they doubt themselves, or the child looks up at you and realizes, okay, wait, I'm not as good as I want to be, or, you know, I don't, you know, there's just that moment of disappointment, you know, like, you know, like I remember the moment that John Everett realized he wasn't going to be the best football player that ever existed, right? It's just one of those little moments, right? Throwing mm-hmm. the football with him and some little kid runs by him and he's not big, right? He's a little kid, right? That's why he's so good at motocross.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you go through these moments as a dad where, you know, like, you know, you dream and you do these little things and then that reality hits them, right? And then they have to build their confidence. They really have to find their place in the world, right? It's not, you know, it's not a dreamland. You aren't special. You know, God didn't come down and grant you to be the greatest athlete in the world, or, you know, you're going to be the greatest engineer in the world. You have to work at it and you have to find your place, right? And I feel like what I saw here was I watched my kids come into a place And I do believe that my kids are humble. I don't believe that they, you know, I don't think they walk around with their chest out trying to brag or whatever. I think they're kids. And I'm very happy that at this point, I feel like as a father, that's probably the most proud thing I have about that is that I feel like they're still kids. That at their age, if you talk to them, you don't have to talk to my kids very long to realize they're still kids, right? And I think to be able to come in to Canada and watch them find themselves and have the confidence to walk right up to kids and talk to them and do those things that I know as a child I was not able to do, right? It makes me feel, I can't even tell you the a level of pride I have in my children that they can do that and that, you know, because I do believe that while Canada is accepting of them, I do think if you come into a situation and you act a certain way, you're going to get received that way, right? But I think when they come in as genuine, humble kids who understand, yes, you're right, they have more opportunity than other kids to ride. They have more seat time. They aren't better than these kids. They aren't any better. It's just right now at this point in what they're doing, they've got a lot of seat time and a lot of experience, and they're showing you basically what an 8 and a 10-year-old can do on a bike when you've got all the opportunity in the world to ride. And I don't believe they treat these other children like they're beneath them. And I think that translates real fast into, okay, well, we rode on the track, we competed, but now we're off the track and now we're just a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old playing on the playground. Yeah. And I feel like that is my most proud moment. It's not the winning. It's not if they placed well. I mean, I like when they ride well, of course, and I love the effort. But watching them, you know, integrate themselves into another group of kids the way they did, like, that's the most awesome part of the sport, period. So, yes, I loved it. I loved it.
For certain. And second most would most likely be those Money Inc. engines that you've been bolting into your kids' bikes, because I hear those things bark.
Well, it's not – okay, so it's not just the engines bark. It is Steve. I mean, Steve knows the
Hell
kid.
Yeah.
He takes the time to learn the kid. And I will tell you, like, Patrick's bikes bark when they need to bark. They when he couldn't handle the bark, he tuned it down. And I don't know a lot of people that, like, I feel like you call people, you get the package, right? There it
right.
is. And when he started working with us, he just knew John Everett, right? And John Everett was a good bit further than Patrick. So when I talked to him, I was like, Steve, you know, like, I need reliable. I don't need your fastest motor. I need something reliable. I need something that, you know, that Patrick can kind of ease into and get ready. And, oh, yeah, I totally get that, right? And he did. He provided me a bike. The Junior was awesome. When we first tried the 65, he totally honest with me. He was like, man, this is a beta. I haven't done a lot of these. You know, like, I think John Everett's the right kid to do this with. And I will tell you, he put in the time and the effort, and he built John Everett a bike that I think we got almost 60-something hours out of his mod bike. And still today, John Everett says that's the fastest 65 he's ever been on.
That's
and he's getting it rebuilt right now for when we go back to Minio's or either Baja Acres. He's going to get it back because, you know, I didn't really know the rules in Canada, so we just brought full stock bikes here. I didn't want to try to do anything. You know, I knew that, you know, you can do some mods here, but I figured, hey, let's just go stock. But when we go back to the States and race there, like, I know John Everett's waiting to get back on that bike. So, I mean, I can't say enough about those motors. I think Steve is just, he's the right guy when you're looking for somebody to care about your kid, to know your kid's name, to know how he rides. You know, like, I feel like he's one of those guys that will sit there and listen to that and then build you an engine for that, right? And then if your kid's ready for a rocket, you know, he will absolutely put your kid on a rocket. That is the truth.
Oh, yeah. No, I've seen it firsthand at races like World Mini or Loretta Lynn's. It seems like every other kid on the podium is thanking Money Inc. For giving them a whole shot.
The size of Jet Rao. I mean, that kid he's huge. And, I mean, that bike looks, when that kid takes off, that's a perfect example of a kid that's, like, not every kid can handle that motor, right? That motor would probably loop out half the kids on the start. But that motor that's under Jet Rao that he's built for that child, that is one of the fastest motors I've ever seen. But
certainly,
the kid can handle it.
Yeah, no, and yep. I know he trains hard to be able to hold on to it. You know, his mom's putting him in the through the paces because she's probably the fittest person in the pits, period.
You're not kidding about that, correct? She is.
Yeah, no, she's yeah. built, that lady, but fit on top of that as well. So tell me a little bit about Tapped House. It's down in Texas. From what I've heard, I've only heard great things about the finished product, or the work in progress, I guess would be the better term for the kids that roll out of there. That there's a lot of, just good culture there, good people, and ultimately, not only are they turning out some fast racers, but some great men as well, and ladies.
So. Taylor Painter teaches this, what I would consider a newer style of riding, which is more momentum based. Like the position of my children on the bike has changed since we went there about a year ago. You know, just to keep it, if you want to talk technical, he has technically changed the way my children ride the bike, and it is much faster. It's less wear on the brakes, less wear on the clutch. But it is all about exit speed and learning the lines of the track and, you know, how to, you know, technically ride the track faster. That is, you know, and faster the way Taylor explains it. You know, he does use some pretty, you know, good, strong physics analogies and metaphors to teach these kids that, you know, speed is actually more stable, right? That, like, you know, coming into the corner, the way that he's teaching you to do is actually more stable and trusting themselves. And so the technical part of like obviously Tapped House has got that, and it's so far the best I've seen. And again, I've only been in this now fourth year, and we started in Texas. So, you know, I'm sure there's many places you could go, but for us, we found that was, you know, the definitive change was we could see the riding style change of our kids, and we could see the time change in the difference, because in Texas you ride the same tracks, right? Now, the other part that you're talking about, yes, there are some really good people there. The culture there is awesome. You know, you've got basically a summer camp for kids, 365, 24/7. They ride during the day. They get done with training. Most kids go do their school early afternoon, and then by, you know, mid-afternoon, early evening, they're all playing, jumping ramps, you know, just having a blast, right? So that part, yeah, it's hard to get your kids out of there once you pull them in. I've seen many a kid kicking and screaming not to leave Tap House, right? Because it's fun.
Like, and I want to go there now. I'm 35.
Yeah, no, it's now. Here's where I think they even bring it to another level for us. And I think that, you know, again, you've got to decide for yourself. My wife and I, but we believe that being in a Christian environment is, you know, that's kind of like, that's at one level up. You know, like I can overlook even a bad trainer if we're, you know, we're in a Christian environment, right? I can, and what I mean by bad trainers, you know, maybe he's not teaching the perfect technique, or, you know, I'm not quite doing this right. But Tapped House brings it all to the table. And then on top of that, you do have the Christian environment where the children are encouraged to support each other. And I think, you know, watching my kid go from riding off the track by himself after a race, you know, accepting whatever position he was, to riding off the track and stopping at the exit and waiting for whoever kid there and fist pumping and talking to the kids and understanding that, you know, like we talked about before, there's not a lot of people that love motocross. More people love ping pong than motocross. So if you really, you know, if you don't want to love the people that you're racing and the families that you're racing, you know, you're kind of missing it, because without all of them, you don't have the race. You don't get to do what you want to do, because there's not millions of people showing up to support this sport. It's the people that you're racing and those families that you're racing. So the environment where everyone just goes back to their own trailer and no one communally talks at the amateur level, it doesn't make much sense to me. And I feel like that happens too much in the United States, where when we're racing there, we don't communally get together and support each other like that. Well, I would say that was a little different in Canada. I didn't feel that way there. I felt in Canada there was a little bit more of a cultural shift, in that we realized, okay, we're all families in this. We're all supporting each other. And without each other, we don't have this. So I felt more compelled, like even at the gate, there was more communication, there was more support given to each other. And it wasn't just at face value, you could tell it was genuine. And I think that, you know, one of the problems that we might have in the States, this over-glorification that I've experienced with the children, especially the ones that, you know, are fast and are, you know, making a name for themselves and can somehow be marketed, right? I feel like that almost gets lost because it gets, there's so much weight put on factory deal, making this, doing this, getting this recognition, that we miss that opportunity to communally deal with our children and make each other better and take that moment. Like someone really awesome told me one time at Tap House, his name was Barat. He said, Bradley doesn't need me on a good day. Like when Bradley's riding good, he doesn't need me. He doesn't, you know, I'm just there. I'm just there to pay the bill, make sure he's on the bike, make sure what he needs. But if he's having that bad day, that's when I need to be there for him, to cook that steak for him, to put the arm around him and let him know, like, just keep showing up, kid. Just keep showing up, right? And so I'm paying attention to the dads that still have those close relationships with their kids, you know, later. And what I'm seeing is in Canada, these 17-year-olds are still racing with their dads and they're still hanging out with them at the trailers and they're all still communally hanging out together. And how many times, Brad, have we heard that story in the States of, like, you know, the dad and the kid, they don't even talk to each other anymore, right?
No, all
it's
the time.
It's gotten so bad that they're just, you know. And so I don't want to oversell that, but I'm telling you that my experience has been, if you have gotten to a place in racing, in AMA in the States, where you might feel a little bit of what I just spoke, then I think, you know, your heart might do good to go to a place like a Tapped House, or like come up here and race in Canada and get into that culture, right? Because I felt more supported and more of that, this race culture in Canada that I felt at Westcan, I feel that at Tapped House. I do feel supported. I do feel like when a kid beats my kid or vice versa, they're still in support of each other, right? And then at the end of the day, they're going off and playing together. Because you don't have any, like that's you don't have somebody else to go play with. It's the kids that you're competing with daily at Tapped House. You have to play with them because that's all you have. So then you now have created this culture where it doesn't matter the fast or the slow kid. We're just all kids after we get off the track. Does that make sense?
100%. And that's what it's all about. Like I have more memories of off the track stuff growing up racing than I do on the track stuff, honestly. Like probably I didn't have a lot of memorable results. That might be the biggest problem there, but, honestly, I remember just like track walking with my buddies and just like quoting movies or, yeah, building a little dirt jump in the back of the pits when we were supposed to probably be getting some air conditioning and preparing for my next moto. But that's just, I don't know, that's part of being a kid.
My kids have never, ever, ever spoken about their time on the track at Loretta's. All they've ever spoken about is getting crawfish out of the creek.
That's right. That's,
like when you talk to my kids about Loretta's, that's what they'll tell you about. All the crawfish and the time that they caught a couple of fish in the creek. Right. I don't know of any time we've ever sat down and talked about how much they love the track.
Right? Fair enough. If they're in two classes, they'll ride six motos and two practices. That's eight times on the track over the course of 6 days.
Well, it's really over 2 weeks because you have to get there a week earlier. You're going to park, you know, so far away that it's just almost, so you go there a week early.
Last year we drove around and we were like into the back 40 and I'm like, there's still people parked out here. They're like, oh yeah.
Yep. And again, I don't personally understand why they keep having, I mean, there must be some reason that I'm unaware of that they continue to have it there. But as someone who doesn't know anything about it, when I first drove in there 2 years ago and saw what Loretta's was, my first thought was, why are they having it here? This is insane. You have no connection to the outside world. You're plugged into a little bitty spot. God forbid anything ever really happened. There's one way in and out, and it's tiny. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me where they have it and at the level that they have it. And I personally just believe, like the tracks we just did in this Westcan series, I mean, they're big elevation changes up on hillsides and all this. I mean, you kind of drive down into Loretta's and you see it, and there's just like this track that they just put down there on the ground in front of you. And I know it gets gnarly. I know it has all this stuff, but I'm just speaking from my personal experience.
Right.
I didn't even think that was, when I first drove in, I didn't even think that was the track. I just thought that was some kind of like, you know, how tracks have like a side track or,
yeah,
you know, whatever. I just thought, okay, that's the front track, and we're going to drive back and eventually get to this grand. I mean, we had gone that year to Pleasure Valley. We had gone to like some places where when you walked out onto the green, or like Minio's, when you walk out there and you just see this huge layout of a track and you're like, oh my God, look at this, right?
Well, yeah, there's regional qualifiers in Redbud.
Right. And so you roll up on Loretta's and, you know, for me, I don't want to say too much negative, but it wasn't what I expected, right? Now, when we went up to the starting gate and all the banners and all the people and all the marketing that went on, okay, yeah, like I was enamored by that. That was pretty awesome. But the actual facilities and having to get around and not having an internet connection and not being able to call people and, you know, and it's so hot, you know, like it's just, there's no shade. Unless you're right along the track. So it just, there was a lot of things that left me wondering, like, why do they do this here every year? Like, you know, I mean, I kind of think it makes more sense to change up where you do races anyway, so that no one has an advantage. I mean, if someone's been going to Loretta's for 6 years straight, I mean, okay, well, how does that translate to the person doing it for the first time? You know, if it's the same track, like that doesn't make sense to me. But again, you know, these were all factors when I started thinking about, okay, like, let's make better riders, right? Well, do we go try to get to Loretta's, and if we get lucky, we get to go to Loretta's again and do the same track? Or do we go to Canada and try something new? And, I mean, it's hard for me to not believe that right now what we're doing isn't better long term. And I've heard some of these, you know, Facebook comments that, you know, when they're talking about riders, and they're talking about Jet Lawrence and Hunter Lawrence, one of the things that I remember them saying about their background was how they traveled all over the place and raced in all these different places and didn't focus in one area. And a lot of people believe that's one of the reasons why they were so successful. And I'm not comparing my kids to them. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that if that worked for them to get around and race all these different tracks, well, then it doesn't make sense for me to just take my kids to Freestone every year and take my kids to, you know, Underground every year. And then, you know, not to down Loretta's, but the same Loretta's track if they happen to be lucky enough to make it, you know, like, and then Oak Hill is the same track they've raced half a dozen times, right? So I do believe what we've done is not also good culturally. I think it's going to make better riders to travel and do this and to add the Canadian series to what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've added a little bit of multiculturalism into a summer and basically like a 365 addiction that you guys have to the sport of motocross. I assume you have a very supportive wife. Shout out to what's your wife's
name? Incredible. Her name's Mallory, and she is absolutely incredible. Not only does she live with the three of us in a toy hauler right now, but yeah, she is the homeschooling, you know, she does all the homeschooling for the kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we were doing homeschooling before we got into moto, so that, you know, lucky that fit great with our lifestyle, right? That
right.
definitely helps. But she's also very understanding that what our children are doing, like while they are children, it is a very demanding sport, right? And so my kids are on, you know, a very strict diet that she manages. And I think most people would probably would think we were nuts to the level that my wife takes it. But like she says, like what goes into their body, that's the most important thing. And as a mother, you know, like she's, you know, like, I mean, no sodas is just the beginning, right? My children are definitely, you know, like no sugar, all that kind of stuff. But they actually take supplements and they take things that will help them, you know, as athletes,
you know, basically
perform better, right? Because at, you know, a 30-minute moto, I don't care if you are 8 or 10, that's still very demanding, right?
For sure it is.
And now that, you know, John Everett's, you know, 60-something pounds, 65 pounds, and he's trying to throw around an 85 now that he barely fits because in 2 years he'll be racing the 85 full-time, right? So he's trying to get a head start on that. And, you know, after watching him throw a, you know, what is a 150-pound bike around that weighs more than double what he weighs, you know, like they have to be, you know, like what they eat is very important. And, you know, I would say that for a lot of families out there that I see that come to Tapped House and all that, if there's one place that I feel like we could all probably learn from my wife, it's in these children's diet. And I do think that one of the reasons why my children perform well at these races is because my wife, you know, is so focused on how they eat, what they eat, you know, and, you know, their exercise is obviously that's not a problem because you're riding dirt bikes and you're doing workouts. But I see these kids do what they're doing and then they jump off the bike and they get a bag of chips or a soda or something like that.
Right.
And I just, you know, you just know that like, okay, like, yeah, your kid's going to handle it, but your kid would be performing so much better if he didn't just get a sugar rush, you know? And, but you know, it's just one of those things where not only am I fortunate that my wife is, you know, not just, you know, okay with this, she embraces it, right? She sees like her job now is to help them perform to their best. She's not just sitting on the sideline being a, you know, supportive mom trying to help. Like she is the leader of our family. You know, I mean, she's the one that, you know, we wouldn't be doing this Canadian series if she didn't believe this was in the best interest, you know, of our children. And I feel like, you know, it's fortunate because I don't have to make all these decisions on my own. You know, she's as plugged in and she's doing the research and trying to figure all these things just with me. And, right. So I can't say enough, like I'm so fortunate that Mallory is the way she is. I just literally have to get in the truck, make sure everything functions, make sure bikes work, get us from A to Z. But you know, like registration, that's what I was telling you. She's told me that this has cost us less because I have no idea. I just show up, right? She does all the registering. She does all the getting them signed up, signs all the releases. And from what she's telling me, that experience in Canada has even been easier than what she's dealt with in the States, which I find that kind of funny because I would expect it to be more difficult considering we're out of the country. But according to her, everything so far has been actually easier. I don't know how that's worked, but
I think just Canadians are easygoing, man. Like I think it's so funny. A friend of mine was like, "Well, I submitted my my media credential like request to the Triple Crown series. I haven't heard back yet." I'm like, they'll probably just, if you show up and say you submitted the thing, they'll just say, "Sure, here's a vest."
You know, I would.
Please
not
don't die out there.
How it feels, right?
Yeah,
and it should be that way. Nobody's making money at this, right? It's just about kids having fun and riding their dirt bikes at the amateur level, right? So, it's,
yeah.
I don't know that it needs to be so hard lined anyway, right?
Right. Like the,
you know,
the
and
registration,
I mean, and not that. Okay, so. I also want to bring up something else that kind of bugged me, and it's part of the culture that, you know, I don't know if this goes on a lot in Canada, but like, you know, like the cheating thing that goes on in the United States, right?
Yeah, that's completely, as a Canadian, like there might be, like, I don't know if anyone was cheating when I was racing, but I just assumed no one was because that is like, no one tears each other down. Like if I, at least not at like the local level, like maybe like the Walton, there might be a little tiny sliver of that, but it's like 1/10 to like maybe 1% of what you'd experience in the States from what I've found.
It's got, because I'm telling you, like there's the general feel that like in the States, you know, I would expect if you got caught cheating, right, you would, you know, you'd humbly, okay, I'm sorry, I screwed up, you know, right? But I feel like in the States, you know, people who get caught cheating, they just get upset, you know, and they're mad that they got, you know what I mean? And it's like, shame on you for protesting me. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, like, I don't understand why you cheat on the amateur level anyway, but, you know, because it's, I mean, I don't blame the kids. I'm assuming it's the parents. I don't think any kid is asking their parent to cheat for them.
No.
But... You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's like that, but I do believe that like part of the problem that I find is that there's just not enough of a penalty. Like when you find, when these things actually happen, what I've realized is, you know, okay, the kid might've got disqualified or he didn't get to finish the race, but then that kid will just show up at the next race and ride again. And there's, I don't, and again, my own personal experience, just what I've seen.
Right.
And it leaves me thinking, well, of course they're going to cheat. Like I'm almost now thinking, well, like, well, yeah. I mean, if literally all you do is get disqualified from that race, but you can go race another race right after that, and go do what you want to do, well, then there's really no penalty. You still got the ride time. You're not winning any money, so who cares if you didn't get the trophy? Who cares if you didn't get the position? You still got the ride time. You still got the race experience. Right. You get to show up and race again. I mean, where's the penalty? You didn't get the trophy?
Yeah.
Well, who cares about the trophy, right?
Yeah, you don't get a trophy, or I guess it's the embarrassment of being caught, I suppose.
But what I'm saying is I don't think there is an embarrassment in the States. Unfortunately, I think the overall rule is if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And that's hard for us, right? You know, I don't know how many times John Everett or Patrick has lost to some other child that they're on a cheater bike. It may have never happened, but it's just frustrating as a person that, like, takes care of his bike. How many times have I tried to fix a bike or tune a bike better because I see my bike getting pulled and thinking, oh, well, maybe there's something wrong with my bike, and there's really not, you know?
Yeah, and you're searching for something that's not there.
Correct. I don't care about the money. I don't care about the trophies. I don't care. I just care about my wasted time trying to fix something that didn't need to get fixed because this kid over here's, you know, got a bigger bore or, you know, has done something to his bike that legit makes it faster than mine. And, you know, and I'm chasing something that I can't catch because I'm not willing to cheat. Right.
Right.
And I feel like what I saw in Canada sounded like flat out stock bikes to me. Like I didn't see anything crazy. You know, it seemed like all the bikes were performing about the same. And it just makes me wonder now after seeing that, you know, like, you know, I'm thinking about some of the past bikes I've seen where, like, you know, a kid gets a hole shot that, you know, normally I've never seen do that. And I'm thinking back, okay, wait a minute. Like maybe there is something with that. And it's just, that's a shame that that's a part of this sport. But I do feel like, again, that's another benefit I felt like of going into this Canadian series. I do feel like at least on the West Can side, we'll do the East Can next.
Yeah, I'm interested, like, to see if there's maybe some like cheating French Canadians or something like that. Maybe it's the Quebecers that'll be pumping out some extra CCs. We'll see.
Maybe, but at the end of the day, like you said, I'm not protesting. I'm not protesting the kids' race. If you want to cheat, you can cheat and have the trophy. I just want you to let me know that you did it, so I'm not trying to chase your bike. You know what I mean?
Like, totally. Give me the heads up. I think that's funny. You're like, you come up to Canada, and you're like, either these bikes are slow or everyone's cheating at home.
Right. Like, is this what it looks like with stock bikes? Like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, and the funny thing, after doing a little research up here, you can actually do more to bikes in Canada than you can in the U.S.
Really?
You just have to maintain state. Yeah, I did a little research on the online. And what it looks like to me is in the States, we have a mod class, right? We have a limited and a mod class. Well, in the mod class, we can change the head. We can do something with the piston. We can do all this stuff. And here, there's not really a limited, honestly, here. In Canada, there's not a limited or mod, but what it comes down to, as long as the case is the OEM case, you can pretty much do whatever you want to do on the inside as long as you don't change the displacement, right? So if I want to take out first gear, if I want to change the ratio of the gears, you know, if I want to just, you know, whatever, as long as it's inside that case and I didn't change displacement, I'm thinking Canada's got, you know, I like that. That sounds pretty good. That, you know, that's a straight up rule. But in the States, I don't know why we have this limited and mod class, but if people are going to cheat, what's the point? Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, there's no, why, just might as well just have one class, you know, but whatever.
You're 100% right. And yeah, it's interesting to see sort of like the dichotomy of the two. And you've now experienced both. You'll get a little bit more of that in Ontario. And I think the Ontario series and like they have the AMO, their Reloaded AMO series, which is honestly like probably one of the most preeminent series is in Canada that is like a provincial series or a regional series. They do an amazing job. And you're going to go to Gopher Dunes, which, in my opinion, as far as North America goes, it might be the last amazing, proper sand track. It's as deep and as nasty as Lommel Bend, Belgium. It is high speed. It is technical. It is everything that a sand track should be. And it's on our national series. It's the crown jewel of the series as far as I'm considered. And I'm looking forward to your sons, running into, some stiff competition over there.
I am too, because to be straight up with you, Brad, my kids are not that great in sand.
That's awesome.
The surface, the dirt that they were riding in West Can was very similar to the dirt that they rode when we first started, because we have 22 acres down in Smithville, Texas, that has that kind of what I would consider like sandy topsoil, but kind of a hard base bottom, but can develop those ruts and those turns and have those kickers and those, you know, the like really choppy type conditions. That's what they started riding on in Texas. That's the kind of dirt that they were in, right? And we found out about a year ago that when we go to sand, they sit too far up on the bike because they were trained old school, right? They go up on the bike when they get on turns, and they started going high side in the sand. And that's one of the reasons why we ended up at Tapped House, because the form that Taylor teaches them, when they do go down in sand, they tend to go low side, right? Because he's changing that position in the turn from down, you know, up on the front of the bike, getting close to the gas tank to get in there, to more of a back on the bike. You know, you've got your all your weight on your outside peg. You know, you're pushed back, you know, in a position where you're almost like, it looks like a missile, like you're just trying to get down in the bike and ride that rear shock through and keep the front end light, right? And get out of that turn. And it's something that my boys had to learn, because they had been taught that old school way, you know, drive into the corner, get up on the tank, turn, you know, hard and come out gas. And I think that I'm really excited to see them go and ride. I don't know how they're going to do placement wise, but just the fact that what I've heard about this track in the sand, this is exactly what my boys need. Like this is the kind of terrain that they're going to struggle in. And it's their Achilles heel, if you will, right? It's where it's really what they need to work on. And I'm just super pumped, because I think we're actually going to go up there a week early.
Yep.
And from what I understand, the track is open prior to the race the week before. So they'll get a couple of times to, you know, hit this track and give it a go. But I fully expect this to put my boys through their paces. And, you know, like, I'm just hoping we come out of it, you know, with our head up and, you know, like better riders than when we went in. But I really believe that, you know, hopefully West Can doesn't, you know, set too much of a high expectation of the boys, because I do have to admit that the dirt that I watched them ride on those first three races, it just was very similar mm-hmm. to what they're used to. Even though we're up in Canada, it wasn't, you know, that's the terrain that I would expect them to do their best.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, yeah, no, they will certainly be challenged by both the competition on the track and the track itself. So I'm looking forward to it. Honestly, Everett, I know you've probably got to get to bed, although it's probably still not dark in your camper just yet.
I think we finally got to where it was dark. I think we're finally there.
Perfect. Yep. Perfect, my friend. Well, I really appreciate this. Honestly, I'd love to have you on toward the after the Transcan to sort of get your full synopsis of taking on the Triple Crown series. I hope that someone may have listened to this podcast, and not only did they get excited about Money Inc. engines, but also following suit and maybe chasing Canadian Moto glory for the summer themselves.
Yeah, and I would definitely point them in the direction of Tapped House. You know, if you're looking for a group to join that, you know, you can, you know, kind of build around and have some sense of community with, I feel like we finally found that with Tapped House. They're the ones that plugged us into this. And I would expect that, you know, if this is something that someone might be interested to, they're in the States, plug in a Tapped House, because I promise you, we will be doing this again next year. Like, this is not something that, you know, I feel like is oh, this was a one-shot deal or this is the end. I feel like this is the beginning for us, you know, the beginning of the traveling and going to these races. And we've already decided for sure West Can, and unless something, you know, really weird happens, you know, like, I'm pretty sure it's going to include East Can and Trans Can, because from what I understand, like you said, the competition even gets raised up a level, more riders, you know, and more races, you know. So I would expect that if someone is looking into this, call Tapped House, get plugged in, find out what's, you know, what we got going on. It, you know, we may, I think there's some talk about going to Florida towards the end of the year. You know, if you think you want to start traveling and, you know, like doing this with a group that, you know, I feel like would be a good influence on your children, call Tapped House, get plugged in, find out where we're going, what we're doing. And, hopefully we'll hear from you.
That's awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for the time this evening. I've really appreciated it. I'll let you get on with the rest of your day, my friend.
All right, Brad, have a good night.
Awesome, man. Don't hang up just yet, but for podcast sake, we're going to cut things off right there.
Welcome to Best 42 in the land. All ages from kids up to grown men. Walk through the gates of the coal miner's daughter to make a point clearer than the creek water. Who's the best? Who's it gonna be? In Hurricane Mills, Tennessee. Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the whispering. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Line on the field. If you can put it all together three times, this 1 week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do. 20 plus 2 out at the ranch. Golf carts, pit bikes, and rowdy fans. Play the national anthem and everybody stands. Smell the smoke from the two strokes riding by. The 30-second card's on its side.
It's time to